Thank you so very much for the privilege of being here. I'm absolutely honored to be with you this morning. You're a wonderful church, and Bonnie and I always enjoy being with you, so thank you so much. You're blessed with such tremendous music here. It's just absolutely wonderful. It's a throwback in time for Bonnie, because Barry was the music minister over at Spray Baptist for a long time. And it's good to see you, Barry. I play a lot of golf, as Larry Walker knows and Steve knows, at Tanglewood. The ninth hole there, Larry, if you play, you know that hole. It's a tough golf hole. It's about 375 yards. For those of you who don't know golf, that's a pretty long way for an average golfer. And it's all uphill. And it's usually my nemesis. So I was playing one day, and I had a good round going, which is kind of unusual for me. So I got to that hole, and I hit a good drive just right down the middle, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. And then I got over the next shot. Well, there's a cemetery up at the top of the hill next to an old Methodist church. And so I stood over the golf ball, and I launched this shot, and right into the cemetery amongst the tombstones it went out of bounds, and I got humbled yet again. And so I was walking among those tombstones that day, looking for my golf ball, and I began to think about those grave markers and what they represent. There are about 50 of them in that old cemetery. Some of them are small, about a foot tall and just a few inches wide, and some of them are larger. Well, our lives have a way of bringing a string of losses to us. Some of them small setbacks along the way. Others of them large wounds of the heart. Disappointments, mistakes, major failures we make along the way. Disappointments, sometimes when we get hurt bad by life. And other times when the people we love suffer around us. However, those grave markers also point to something else. They point to a series of resurrections, to an empty tomb due to the love and the power of God to deliver people and to give us hope. The losses in our lives bring a string of new chances and new opportunities on this side of the grave. With God's grace and His power to deliver us, all of us have many chances to start over, to begin again, and to rebuild our lives, and to be thankful for what God has done for us. So I'm going to put this right here. I don't need it. And so the reality of loss and the assurance of hope, this is the centerpiece of many of the Psalms, many of them. The writers of the Psalms were very well acquainted with the nature of real life, with the ups and downs of life, and with authentic faith. The writers of the Psalms, like 107 that we read, knew that things don't always work out like we want. There was no prosperity gospel, so to speak. They knew that life, real life, is plenty hard along the way, but more importantly, they could also testify to the great goodness of God, to how the Lord could always make a way for people when seemingly there was no way. And so in that context, the writer of Psalm 107 penned his words, calling on the people to give thanks to God for His unending love, for His mighty power given to them right at the point of their needs. He began in verse 1 and 2. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, and His steadfast love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so. Everyone He's delivered from trouble. The key word in those initial verses is a Hebrew word, and it's spelled H-E-S-E-D. It's the Hebrew word hesed, and it's found over 300 times in the Old Testament. It's the very center of Old Testament theology. The word means the steadfast love of God. This is the unchanging, the eternal nature of God the writers of the Old Testament had come to believe. The God they loved, the God they had come to know as the one who made a covenant with the people of Israel. He would never abandon them. He would never forsake them. Our Bible translates that word hesed into various ways. It means God's love. Whenever you see that word love in the Old Testament related to God, that is hesed. God's mercy is the same word. God's kindness is the same word. God's faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. This is the hesed of God. God's goodness. 300 times across the pages of the Old Testament. God's unchanging, unending nature is this: enduring faithfulness to the people whenever they called out to him. He would be there, and he would be at work to help them. Ann was asking me a few minutes ago about some of the names of God in the New Testament, the Old Testament. Yahweh is one of them. One of the Hebrew translations of that word Yahweh is this: I will be there. I will be there. I will never abandon you. I will never forsake you. This is the eternal, unchanging nature of our God. And so the psalmist then in 107 goes on to describe four various scenarios, four examples to show what he meant. Four word pictures of people in great distress in their lives to the point of despair. And they cried out to God in their need, and he delivered them, always faithful. He delivered them, whether the problems were of their own making or just came out of the blue and they had nothing to do with them. No fault of their own. And each time they responded by giving thanks to God for his mercy, his hesed, and for his mighty works to deliver them. And so I invite you to think about your own life, or the lives of people that you know, and that you care about, and see if you relate to what the psalmist was saying. The first scenario was in verses 4 through 9 in this chapter. And he described a group of travelers who'd lost their way. And so they were wandering in the wilderness, and they ended up in the very worst possible place, in the burning sands of a desert. And they were lost and alone. They didn't know which way to turn, and they were completely without help. No one to help them, no help in sight. And they were exhausted, without strength. Their strength had gone, and the psalmist said it's like they were starving to death and dying of thirst. And in that situation, they cried out to God, and he answered them. He made a way for them out of this wasteland. He helped them find their way. He put their feet on the right path, and he led them to a place where their needs could be met, mainly their spiritual needs. Gave them hope, restored their lives. Then he goes on to a second scenario, to a second word picture. These were people he described who were bound in some kind of darkness. They were shackled, he said, like prisoners in a dark cell. They were burdened by problems that overwhelmed them. And they were captive to troubles all around them. They felt absolutely helpless, with no way to escape, hopeless in this dungeon they were in. And they too cried out to God and yearned for him to help them. And the one who answered them was the God who had mercy. The God of everlasting, unchanging love. He saved them. He broke the chains of of their bondage. He liberated them and he brought them out of the darkness and right into the light of day. He was saying that no prison is so severe, no jail cell is so locked down that God couldn't set people free. And then he describes a third scenario, third type of calamity. These are people whose sinfulness led to all kind of distress. Well, I don't know about you, but I know what that's like. Our own sinfulness leads to some painful consequences in our lives. The sin of self-centeredness, the sin of pride, of greed, unchecked anger, laziness, lust, all the deadly sins. And they all lead to painful consequences in our lives, and they disrupt the relationships that we have with people around us. And so the psalmist said these people, because of their sinfulness, were so depressed they couldn't eat. And they felt like they were going to die. They were doomed by their failures. And in the midst of all that turmoil, they called out to God. And he sent a messenger to them. And the messenger brought this word, not to condemn them, but to forgive them and to set them free, to heal them and to give them hope, to give them a new chance to start their lives over again. And then finally, in verse 23 through 32, the psalmist gives the last scenario, the last word picture. He describes a group of travelers, of business people, who were on the sea, probably the Mediterranean Sea, and they got caught in a fierce storm, and a storm that came out of nowhere, right out of the blue. And the waves were so high, they were just tossed back and forth in their lives, and they didn't know what to do. They were terrified. And waves of doubt and insecurity and fear, anxiety overwhelmed them. But the psalmist said their courage melted away and they were at their wits' end. They did not know what to do and where to turn. They thought they were going to drown. And they cried out to the Lord and he made the storm be still and quieted the waves. That ever happened in your life? He made the storm be still, and he quieted the waves. That is, he brought them peace, and the God of the Almighty God of mighty works and of steadfast love delivered them, brought them peace. And like each of the other scenarios, they gave thanks to God for his steadfast, unchanging love, for his wonderful deeds to help them. And the psalmist closed in verse 43. He said, "Who is wise among you? Let him take heed of these things and consider, ponder the steadfast love of God in your life." That is, keep your eyes open. See the many ways that God has been there for you. Look for the evidence of God's hesed, his steadfast love, his unchanging goodness and mercy, for mercies that are new every morning, for his faithfulness. Keep your eyes open. As the Apostle Paul would later write in the New Testament, be watchful and thankful. That's a good thing for you and me to do. Be watchful and thankful. Well, Mark saw clearly, the gospel writer Mark, he knew that the very same God who had delivered the children of Israel time after time after time had come to them in Jesus. The very same God, the one with ultimate power, the one with unending love, had come right to them in Jesus. And Mark gathered several miracle stories in his gospel right there in the middle of his book to make this point about this Jesus. And one of the stories, the miracle stories, was linked to Psalm 107 that we just talked about. I'm sorry, it was linked to Psalm 107, and it was the miracle story that you read for us in Mark, the fourth chapter. So the disciples, as John was remembering, the disciples, there's so much about this story. I wish I had time to tell you about it. There's so many minute details in this story that it had to be an eyewitness telling Mark about what happened. Probably that was Simon Peter, who was recalling this, and Mark wrote it down. And so they were traveling across the Sea of Galilee, and a furious storm came on the lake. Usually the waters of the Sea of Galilee are very calm. They're beautiful. But around the Sea of Galilee, there's some high mountains with some steep ravines, and sometimes the wind can be gathering up in the high mountains and just come rushing down through the canyon walls and explode onto the water and create a furious kind of storm, and that's what happened this day. And the disciples were overwhelmed with terror and with fear, and they cried out to Jesus, who had been asleep. They cried out to him, "Don't you care that we're about to drown?" That's an important point in this story. The disciples held nothing back from Jesus. Not their fear, not their doubt, not their disappointment, not their anger. They cried out to him. And then Jesus responded. He commanded these howling winds to stop. And a calm settled right over the water again. He commanded to the wind and the waters, "Peace, peace, be still." The words there in the literal Greek language, they're not pointing to Jesus meek and mild. They're pointing to the mighty Son of God who had all the power of God was available to him. And he saved their lives. In the midst of all their fears, Jesus encouraged the disciples to have faith. The word in the Greek language there literally means to trust him. When you see the word faith in the Bible, that's what it means. Trust him. Rely upon him. Depend upon him with your life. And Mark's point was this. The very same Jesus who rescued the disciples from the terrors of a raging sea was still present with them. And whatever storms they faced, he could help them. He could deliver them. And they could trust him. Well, today, for people like you and me in this sanctuary, the message is the same. We don't have to look far till we see people facing all kind of hard places in their lives. When I look at Bonnie, I go to Ardmore Baptist, and when I look across the sanctuary, the people I know and love in that church, I see many, many people who are faced with different kind of hard things in their lives. For some, it might be the frightening, sudden storm of an illness or some kind of loss that they're dealing with. And others are burdened by family problems with their children or their aging parents. And some are overcome with worries about their work. And they're filled with worries that won't seem to end, that just keep going on and on and on. And still other people are lost in a wilderness of loneliness. And still others face despair because of failures in their lives, mistakes they've made, feel weighted down by guilt and shame and feel like it marks them for life and they'll never have any future. Well, whatever it is that life brings our way, whatever heartache, whatever fear, whatever problem, Jesus yearns for you and me and the people we love to call on him and to have faith. That is to trust him, to trust his unending love and his mighty power to act on our behalf. He can always lead us to new beginnings. He can always create a new beginning for us beyond our imagination. And he can always help us find a way to peace, and he can always renew our hope. Last Wednesday night at prayer meeting at Ardmore Baptist, Bonnie and I were sitting there in the fellowship hall, and we sat by a couple, a husband and a wife, whose story is a very profile in loss and resurrection, in fear that was overcome by their faith. They were raised in Ethiopia. They lived quiet lives there in their country until it got convulsed, turned upside down by revolution. And the rebels killed several of their family members, his father, a brother, and other family members. The grief and the fear in their lives, it was unimaginable. And so they fled. They fled to a refugee camp in Ghana. And they lived there for 2 years in the midst of unspeakable poverty and suffering. The husband did his best to support his family in that refugee camp. He became like a social worker and a medic to help people. And hope finally came to this family through a Christian organization called World Relief. They helped refugees and immigrants get resettled. And so our church became their sponsor. A small group in our church became the hands and feet of Jesus, so to speak. They did all kinds of things to help them. They taught the husband how to drive. They helped their children get in school. They helped them find jobs. The wife in the family was sitting next to us in church, she works in a dietary department at one of the elementary schools, makes a little bit of money. The husband works in housekeeping at Forsyth Hospital, which brings me to last Wednesday. After the service, I spoke to Opiti, which is his name, and I shook his hand, kind of gave him one of those half-man hugs, and told him how thankful we are for him. I congratulated Opiti because he had just won a Sunshine Award at Forsyth Hospital. That's an award given to stellar employees who make a positive difference in the lives of patients and families, whose smile can light up a room. And I told Opiti how proud I was of him and how thankful we are for him and how he blesses our whole church, him and his family. He had tears in his eyes when I spoke to him, and a voice of humility. He gives all the thanks to the love of Jesus and his power to save. Well, I was visiting at the hospital again the other day, and I do some volunteer work, and a nurse asked me to see a patient there. She'd been in the hospital for about a month with a life-threatening illness, and she was feeling pretty down, pretty low. So I went into her room and sat by her bed and told her I could not imagine what she'd been through. How hard it must be for her to go from living a normal life to all of a sudden having her life turned absolutely upside down. Well, I liked this woman from the get-go because she was honest, just like the psalmist. She said, "Part of me keeps trying to be hopeful. The doctors say there's a chance that I may survive. But another part of me is afraid. Actually terrified, because it's like a storm came on my life. And I don't know what's going to happen. The reality is I may not make it. And when I think about that, it really hurts. And it breaks my heart, because I love my family. And I do not want to leave them. They depend on me. And I want to see my grandchildren grow up and have a life of their own. I've gotten away from church," she said, "and I wonder, maybe that's why all of this has happened to me." I assured her that that was not the case. Sometimes she said, it's hard for me to feel close to God. And I told her I sure knew what that was like. In fact, everything she was feeling was normal. What a normal person feels when life gets turned upside down. And she said, well, that sure is good to hear, because I was afraid that I was just losing my mind. And then a sacred moment came. She said, sometimes I try to sit still in this hospital room, and I can't explain it, but it's like a calm comes over me that whatever happens, it will be okay. And I said, that sure sounds to me like the voice of God, a God who really loves you and is saying to you, peace, be still. I am with you, and you can trust me. I can assure each of you here this morning, whatever storm you faced in your life, or whatever storm you might be facing now, or those you love, I can assure you, the words of Jesus are the same. He can turn whatever travails of life you and I face into great triumphs of faith. In closing, I'd like to invite you to a few moments of silence. Where you're sitting, think about what God might be saying to you. Think about how you relate to these words. What's God calling you to be? And what is God calling you to do in response? Our closing hymn is Moment by Moment. And as we sing this song, if there's any decision that you would like to share with this church, I will stand at the front to receive you. If God is speaking to you and you would like to step forward and share a prayer concern or share something, if you'd like to unite with this church, if you'd like to commit your life to Christ for the very first time, if you'd like to recommit your life to Him, or if you'd like to make a decision between you and the Lord where you stand, this is your invitation to do so. May we sing our closing hymn, Moment by Moment.